We now begin Maseches Krisus, and this is the introduction to the Masechta. The topic of the entire Masechta has to do with various karbanos that are brought that are either to atone for a sin, in the case of the Chatas or the Asham, the sin offering and guilt offering, or other karbanos that are brought to conclude processes, either what's called Mechusrei Kapara, people who are lacking atonement, meaning they're finishing essentially a purification process, or they're finishing their Naziris, or they are completing the conversion gerus process. So there are karbanos to be brought, and we'll talk about those karbanos as well. So those kinds of karbanos and what happens if you have to bring multiple, or if you have a suffix, if you have to bring them at all, that's the topic of the Masechta. Now, the word krisus comes from the word kares. Kares, I'll define more at length in a moment, but it basically means to be severed. And it's a reference to the fact that the majority of the karbanos that are talked about in our Masechta are the have to do with the chatas kavua, the fixed chatas, which is brought essentially when a person inadvertently, meaning b'shogeg, does one of the averas for which if he acted intentionally without witnesses and warning, would get a penalty from heaven called kares. So krisus essentially is the plural of kares, if you will, as if kares has a noun, severance, the noun, and then krisus would be sort of the severances, the plural of those different crimes, averas, for which the penalty is kares. That being the case, the truth is that, grammatically speaking, it shouldn't be pronounced krisus with a shva, but rather either krasus or karesus, meaning severances. But anyways, if you pronounce it karesus instead of krisus, in circles that I move in, you're going to be looked at as a very strange person. So therefore, it just goes by krisus, whether you like it or not, whether the grammar makes sense or it doesn't, okay? So that's the topic of the Masechta. Now, what actually is kares? So this is confusing, and there are multiple shitas in the Rishonim, which is why it makes it confusing. There are basically three approaches. The first approach is the approach of Rashi and Tosfos, and Rashi learns in Chumash, etc., that kares means to be, it means premature death, okay? The pasuk, which refers to krisus, there are numerous psukim that refer to kares, but probably they'll call it the most famous, comes in Acharemos at the end, where the various Isurei Arayos, the prohibited sexual unions, are listed. And at the end of that long listing, the Pasuk says, Ki kol esher yase mikol ha-to'evos ha'ele, anyone who does any of these disgusting things, v'nichrasu ha-nafashos ha-osos mikerav amam. The souls that do this, the people who do this, the nafashos that do this, they'll be nichrasu, severed, if you will, from their nation. Now, Rashi learns that the word nefesh or nefashos in that context is referring to a person when he's alive, not his soul, if you will, but like let's call it his body and soul together when he's alive as a person. And therefore, Rashi learns that it means premature death, okay? Chazal are pretty clear about this, even though the Rishonim have different approaches, but Chazal seem to understand the different Chazal that we're talking about, someone who dies young, the Rishonim learns at 50, other Chazals Mo'okan say before the age of 60, that's how the Ramban learns and so on. So premature death before the one's full age is the penalty of kares, dying young. And the psukim sometimes refer to being aririm. And what does aririm mean? So Rashi and Chumash, when Avram says to Hashem that he's going to holech ariri, so Rashi brings two pshatim, the pshatim Menachem ibn Tzuruk, which is that it means essentially without descendants, that the word heir means like the English word heir, H-E-I-R, it's like the Hebrew word ayin resh, heir. So he goes without any descendants, so childlessness. Rashi himself learns it's more of expression of like destruction, like aru, aru, ad yasodba, like words of destruction. In any case, Rashi learns, it seems, that hand in hand with kares goes aririness, even though the psukim only talk about ariri sometimes, and therefore kares would mean premature death before the age of 50 or 60, and also the loss of one's children, Rahman al-Itzlan. The Chazal itself in Yevamos says that defines aririm as yesh lo banim kovrim, ein lo banim holech ariri. So it means that if you have children, then God forbid they'll die, you'll bear it in your lifetime. If you don't have children, you won't have any children. Okay, so that's how Rashi learns. That's a package deal. And Tosas similarly, that kares means premature death and childlessness without a continuity, you know, in terms of one's subsequent generations. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, the 8th Perek, is explicit that Karis is a, I'll call it, spiritual phenomenon. The word nefesh of our pasuk is referring not to a person's life while he's alive in this world, but rather his soul once it leaves his body after death. And the people who get karis are essentially not welcome and able to enter olam haba. Okay, so it's a spiritual penalty, if you will. That's the first halacha in Perek Ches of Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam says, and therefore it's not during one's lifetime. It has no effect on one's life, so to speak, but it has to do with the afterlife. The Ramban has a, I think, quite famous and lengthy explanation. On the pasuk I quoted before, there at the end of Achrimos, the Ramban ends up understanding that there are three kinds or levels of karis. He based on the fact that the psukim sometimes referred to the ish, a person being nichras, sometimes to a nefesh, a soul being nichras. And then there's a third expression, which is like a double expression in the context, at least in the context of Avodah Zarah and Megadeth, blaspheming Hashem, where it says hikares tikares, a double expression. So the Ramban learns as follows. If a person is the kind of person who is mostly good, he has more zuchlios than averus, but he does one of these averus that have the penalty of karis. And again, I should have said this at the beginning. I apologize. I'm sorry. Karis is only a penalty if one acts willfully. He acts b'mezi. He knows it's forbidden. He does it anyway. So this person just, his yetzar gets the better of him and he can't resist this forbidden relationship or eating this forbidden food and the like, doing malacha on Shabbos, all that kind of stuff. So then, says the Ramban, okay, so then essentially that's the least of the three. He's a good person that did a bad thing, and therefore his penalty essentially will be his life will be cut short before the age of 60, says the Ramban explicitly. The Ramban does not tie into that ariri, meaning childlessness or death of one's children, except in the specific examples of the Chumash where it says there's also an ariri element. So in general, if one does these averas, so then if he is mostly good, he will have a shortened life. If worse than that, he's mostly bad, meaning he has more averus or his averus outweigh his mitzvahs, so then in this life he might have a full life, to live to a ripe old age, but he is cut off from like the spiritual life, so what he calls the olam haneshamos. So that looks like essentially 12 months of Gehenna, after which a person's soul is essentially obliterated and like it's dust, whatever that means, is scattered below the feet of the tzaddikim, say Chazal, but he has no olam haba beyond being ashes under the feet of the tzaddikim. That's bad, but not the worst. Level three is the worst. That's the double expression where we said it's a person is hikares olam hazeh and tikares olam haba. So that person essentially gets both. If a person is guilty of idolatry or blasphemy, so then he has his life shortened in this world and he doesn't have a life in the world to come. That's the Ramban's approach to what karis is. So those are three approaches here. Now, let's talk about the basic karbanos of the Masechta, which you basically have three categories. We have what are called the karbanos that come for sin, that's a chatas, you have an asham, and then you have these kind of concluding kapar and the like, concluding process karbanos. So the chatas basically comes in two varieties. The primary chatas is known as the chatas kavua. Kavu means fixed, and the idea is that you're bringing a standard chatas for most of the averas, and that standard chatas is basically a female goat or sheep in its first year. Okay, so what's that look like? That means a person who does an avera, for which the penalty is karis, but he did it b'shogeg, meaning he didn't intend to do an avera. He forgot this was forbidden, etc. So then, or he didn't understand the situation. So then, instead of getting karis, which he gets for willful mezid activity, he'll get he's a shogeg, he has to bring a chatas in its place, the chatas kavua typically. Now, for those who love numbers and the counting here, I'm going to give you the numbers to make it clear here, because this is confusing. The Mishnah, the first Mishnah of Krisus, will list 36 averas, for which the penalty is karis. Okay? The Gemara will add 12 more to that 36, bringing you to 48. How does that work? Because we'll see the one of the 36 on the list is Isha Obita, sleeping with a woman and her daughter, which ends up being not one, but nine different women that are forbidden, if you will. We'll explain in the first Mishnah, Be'ez Hashem. So that adds an extra eight, right? It's not one, but nine, so we add extra eight. And then there's the prohibition of the Ov, the necromancer, which actually there's two separate Isurim, there's two of the Torah mitzvahs both consulting with the Ov and the Yadoni, both two kinds of necromancy. Ov gets it from under the armpit and Yadoni from out of the mouth. But the point is that's two, not just one, so you add an extra one there. And then you have the prohibition of Avodah Zarah, which actually is four separate lavin, which are lumped together, okay? So if you add the extra eight from Ishobita, an extra one from the Yadoni, and the extra three for Avodah Zarah, you can get a total of 12. 8 plus 1 plus 3 is 12. Adding that to 36 that are explicitly enumerated in the Mishnah, 12 plus 36 gives you 48. And in fact, there are a total of 48 averas in the Torah that if one does them, b'mezid intentionally, the penalty is karas. That's 48. Now, the Rambam famously says that there are 43 averas for which there's a chatas kavua, a fixed chatas. So we got to figure out where the missing, where there are five extra ones, if you will. So the answer is, of the 48 krisos for which the penalty is karas for willful activity, two of them are mitzvahs ase, meaning if one elects not to get bris milah or bring the korban pesach, there's a penalty of karas for that. But there's no, since there are mitzvahs ase, there's no chatas that's brought if one does it b'shogeg. So that's two. Then you have the megadef. The megadef is the blasphemer, the person who invokes Hashem's name against Hashem, Rechon Hatzlan. So that person, okay, there is, if he does it intentionally, then he ends up with witnesses, will actually get skila, and if he does it without witnesses, he gets karas. But there's no chatas spirit for that because it's called a lav she'en bo ma'isa. There's no actual act, it's just a verbalization, and therefore that's, there's no chatas, so that's one. And then there are two averas for which the penalty is karas. But there's, instead of the chatas kvua, there's a what's called the chatas, the olav yored, the variable chatas, not a fixed chatas. And that's what's called tumas mikdash ukadashav. If a person is tamei and enters the temple precincts, or he's tamei and he eats karbanos, so then if he does it willfully, he gets kares. But if he does it inadvertently, so then he does not bring chatas kvua. So that's why it's on the list. So therefore, you had 48 total krisuses, but five that of which you don't bring the chatas kavua. Again, the two mitzvahs ase of Mila and Pesach, the magad of the blasphemer, because it's the Embo Maisa, and the two that are olav yored, the person who's tamei who enters or eats kachem. So you minus those five from 48, you get to 43. Those are the 43 chatas kavua. Just one final bit of accounting. If you actually add them up, you'll see 26 of those 43 have to do with different forbidden arayos, sexual unions, and then there are 17 other averas. Okay? And we'll enumerate them essentially all in the next first mission of the Masechta. Okay. So now, therefore, let's just speak now. So, the chatas kavua, again, means a person did one of those 43 things that are penalty of karas, and he did it b'shogeg, so he brings a female goat or sheep in its first year. There are a couple exceptions to that rule. I don't get into the details of everything now, but that's the gist of it. There are a couple, whatever, okay, two exceptions to that, where it's not a female goat or sheep in its first year necessarily. And then you have the olav yored. The olav yored is the variable chatas. So we said you bring that, there's actually, the psukim enumerate essentially three, I'll call them categories of sin for which one brings a olav yored, a variable chatas. What that means is that instead of bringing, if he can afford to bring a female goat or sheep, so then great. But if he can't, instead he can bring two birds, either b'nei yona, baby pigeons, or two tor. A tor is like a turtle dove, okay? So a mature turtle dove or an immature pigeon, if that's what the proper translation is, let's assume. So then that's if he's a dal, if he's poor. And if he's really poor, dal kizik is poor as could be, and can't even afford two birds, then he can bring what's called the minchas chota, the sinner's meal offering, which basically is just flour, okay? So those three averas, or categories of averas, where you bring the, where there's a penalty of the olav yored. First of all, we enumerated is the tumas mikdash ukadasha. That's the first of the three. But you also have what's called the shvuas ha'edus and the shvuas bitui. Those other two. So shvuas ha'edus is when Reuven says, Shimon, please testify on my behalf because I need to reclaim my whatever, and you know the facts. And Shimon says, I don't know the facts. And Reuven says, yes, you do. And Shimon says, no, I don't. And Shimon swears he doesn't have the facts to testify to help Reuven reclaim his money or loss, whatever it is. So he swears falsely about that. And later on, he feels bad and then wants to do tshuva. So as part of his tshuva process, he has to bring a korban, which is the olav v'yored. That's for the shvuas ha'edus. And the second is shvuas bitui. That means like literally an oath of utterance. The point is he makes a shvua that either he did or didn't or will or won't do something. I guess I should say did or didn't happen or will or won't do something. And he swears falsely. So that means either he says he did or didn't go to the store yesterday, when really that's not true, or he says it will or will not in the future do something, but he ends up doing not what he says. So, or for the matter, he says he something did or didn't happen in the past. But if he swears falsely, then that's a penalty for which, again, he must bring an olav v'yored, a variable offering. These two, the shvuas ha'edus and the shvuas bitui, could be done not just b'shogeg, but even b'meza. That's unusual. Usually these korbanos are being brought for just shkagos, inadvertent violations, but here he intentionally lied about his testimony, or even if he intentionally lied about the past or future, or if he accidentally, either one. So then he has to bring these olav v'yored. So those are the olav v'yored. Okay, and those are basically the chataos. There are actually are technically other kinds of chataos, like the parhelim, davar, and whatever, other weird scenarios, but the Masech doesn't discuss them, we don't discuss them either. There are others, right? Like the Asham, excuse me, the chataos brought on the Musafin for on Yom Tov and on Rosh Chodesh, and the chataos brought on Yom Kippur. Okay, but all that's besides the point. Then you have the Ashamos. Ashamos means, translated as guilt offerings. There are a total of six ashamos, which we'll discuss in the Masechta. There are six total altogether. Four of them come essentially for sins, and two are for concluding processes. So the four that come for sin, they're a ram, and then there's less, and they must be, they're more expensive. And if they're coming for these concluding processes, then there's, it can be even a first year male sheep, and it's less expensive. So the three sins that there's a special asham for, they're called the asham me'ilos, asham gezelos, and the asham shivcha charufa. The asham me'ilos is the guilt offering one brings for the misappropriation of consecrated property. That's me'ila. Okay, so if one does me'ila b'shogeg, so besides having to replace the thing he used, because he rode on the animal that was the base of mikdash, or he used the pen that belonged to the base of mikdash, was hektesh, so then besides for having to replace it and add a chomesh, the 25% penalty, he also, if he did a b'shogeg, he must bring a asham me'ilos. Okay, it's, like I said, a ram. The definition of a ram and an isle in the Torah is an animal that's at least 1 year, 1 month, and 1 day old. Okay, male sheep. Then you have the asham gezelos. Asham gezelos is anytime that a person swears falsely regarding owing someone money. So that could come in a lot of ways. A person could have found a wallet or owe someone wages or had on deposit by him, you know, someone's bicycle. And then he lies and says, I didn't find your wallet, or I don't have your bicycle, or I don't owe you those wages. And he swears falsely. Okay. That person, now when it comes out the truth, or when it's a tshuva, he has to bring a special asham, guilt offering, the asham gezelos, for theft. The third is the asham shif charufa. This is really complicated. I'm going to get into it right now. The short of it is that it's if a person is adulterous with a woman who's like half freed and therefore and half free, half slave girl, and therefore she's like half married, half not, then the penalty for that kind of adultery, whether it's intentional or otherwise, is an asham shif charufa. Okay, so those three are the shamos that are for certain sins, like definite sins. There's also a fourth asham, the asham talui, the suspending guilt offering, which comes when a person is not certain whether or not he's obligated to bring a chatas. So instead of bringing a chatas, like, you know, in the refrigerator, there were two pieces of fat. One of them was permitted shuman, one was forbidden chelev under penalty of karis. And he ate one of them. He didn't know which one he ate. And his roommate ate the other one. So he doesn't know, was he the one who ate the chelev and he has to bring a chatas, or he ate the shuman and he brings nothing. Since he doesn't know what he has to do, he'll bring this asham talui, the suspending guilt offering, which will stave off the consequences of having done the chet. In the meantime, and if he ever discovers what really happened, like, you know, he gets the CCTV footage and he sees, oh, I ate the chelev, then he'll have to bring in addition, like later on, he'll have to bring a chatas proper, a chatas kavur. Okay, so those are the four ashamos that are brought for sins. The first three certain definite sins, and the fourth one, tzafek, a questionable sin. That'll be a significant topic on the Masechta. Okay? And then there are these karbonos that are brought for concluding processes. The majority of them are called what it's called for mechusrei kapara, people who are lacking atonement, brought from the verse, okay, of which you essentially have four mechusrei kapara. Okay, you have the zav, that is a man who had this sort of mysterious emission. It's whatever it is. It's not a seminal emission, something else. So he has, if he has three separate emissions, he's like a full-blown zav. And when he becomes tahor after having seven clean days, part of his purification process is to bring two birds. One is, it's always either tur or b'nei yona. One comes as a asham, one comes as a chatas, one comes as an ola. Birds only can be ola, only they're olas or chataos. And it's not coming for sin per se. You understand? He's not a zav because he's a sinner necessarily, but he, as part of his tahara process, must bring these birds. Until then, he's a mechusar kippurim, which means that until he brings these birds, he lacks full atonement, and that means he is still forbidden from entering the Beis HaMikdash, the Azara, the temple complex, or the eating from karbonos, okay? He's like a shlish l'tumah, kind of. Okay? Then you have the zava, which is like the female word of zav, but they're pretty different. The zava is a woman who bleeds mysteriously for three consecutive days, not when she's expecting her regular menstrual period. That one also is Tomeya, and after she has to have seven clean days after that time, okay, besides, again, part of her purification processes after the mikvah, like the Zav, she has to bring two birds, one's an Ola, one's a Chatas, and then you have the Yoledes, the one who gave birth. The Yoledes, a little different here. She, at the end of 40 days, if it was a boy, and 80 days if it's a girl, she, again, has to complete her purification process by bringing karbonos. Here, if she can afford it, she actually should bring an ola, which is a sheep, a male sheep. It could be in its first year, so not an ile. And if she can't afford it, then she will bring a bird instead. And she also has to bring a chatas bird. So either she brings two birds, or one bird and one male sheep. And that's, again, to complete her purification process. Until then, she can't eat from karbonos, like the Korban Pesach. She can't go to the Beis HaMikdash. And again, it's not brought first, even though it's called a chatas. If it's brought as a bird, again, it's not to really expiate for sin. It's just completing the process like the zava and the zava. And then finally, the mitzora. Mitzora has a much more complex purification process, but the bottom line is that at the very end, the mitzora, when he finishes his tzara'as, he had that skin affliction and it's resolved itself, and he does his process. The last thing he does, he has to bring three different kind of karbonos. He brings a male sheep as an asham, and he also brings a male sheep as an ola, and he also brings a female sheep as a chatas. Again, these are all just karbanos from psukim. I'll enumerate in a second, but remember we said there are six ashamos, so that's the fifth of the six. And then you also have other concluding processes. You have the nazir who committed to not become tame from tumas mace or eat grey products or cut his hair. So at the conclusion of his process, he also brings karbanos. He'll bring actually a male sheep as an ola and a female sheep as a chatas and a ram as a shlamim. That's the primary one, okay? And he also has a basket of these two kinds of loaves of matzos, two different kinds of matzos, 10 loaves of each. Okay, until he brings that, he is kind of like a mechusar kippurim. Actually, in truth, is the nazir isn't really tameh in that sense, so he could go to the Beis HaMikdash, but he can't resume his normal life of drinking wine, etc., until he brings this ram and so on. Okay, so similarly, and the nazir who became tummy in the middle, since the nazir took on to become to not expose himself to corpse tumma, if he ends up being exposed to corpse tumma, so then he has to start again, and part of his starting again process also includes the reshaving and so on. But he also has to bring now two birds, okay, as a chatas and ola, as well as a male sheep as an asham. Okay, so now totaling those up, so you're keeping track of things. It's a lot, but it's not unwieldy. There are six ashamos. Three are coming for definite sins, as we said before. Asham gazelos, asham meilos, and the shivcha charufa. Then you have the asham tali, if your maybe did a aver and the nitzvah chatas. Then you have these two other, and those are all rams. And then you have the not necessarily rams, they're just male sheep, and without a fixed minimum amount, for the conclusion of your process, either as a mitzora or as a nazir became tummy. Okay. And the final korban that we end up being a process is the ger, the convert. When a non-Jew converts, the base milch is around, so he has to bring an animal as a korban. It could be an animal, or it could be two birds, as a ola. Okay, so those are also topics of Masechta. Now, so that's the main topic of Masechta, these different korbanos and how they work. Worth speaking out here that there's one last topic of the Masechta, which is like how to deal with if you have like multiple averas that sort of combine. So the basic rule is as follows. If a person does multiple averas, b'shogeg, and each one's a different of the targ mitzvahs, let's call it, each of the 613, so then he'll have to bring a separate chatas for each of them. Even if one single act included two separate crimes at the same time, like if he, in one bite, he swallowed, you know, chalev, and which is forbidden fat, and dam, blood, together, so then he has to bring two korbanos, one for each of them, okay? If, however, he did multiple averos, but they're all a single type of, single one of the 613 mitzvahs, and he did them all what's called behelim echad, only one single lap. So the classic example is Shabbos, okay? A person forgets today's Shabbos, and he plants, and he plows, and he cooks, whatever. So multiple violations of Shabbos. But he didn't know it was Shabbos. Or it could be even that for 5 years, he didn't know there was such a thing as Shabbos, and or his calendar was messed up or something. And for 5 years running, he was Mechal Shabbos every week, all sorts of different averas, but all in one He'elem Echad, one in one lapse of understanding. So then he would bring a single korban for all of those averas because it's only one of the targ mitzvahs. Okay? That said, there is one important exception to the rule, which is if what's they're called gufim muchlakim. If it's gufim muchlakim, means that it's like it's done with multiple different objects or people, then even if it is a single category of avera, you have to bring a chatas for each. Okay, we'll get into that more in the Masechta, but the basic idea is that if a person like didn't know this person he married was actually his sister, so then he slept with her three times, so then there's just one. It's one person and one helem, one lapse, therefore one chatas all is necessary. But if he slept with three different sisters, not again, b'shogeg, not knowing that he was related to them, so then even if it's on one lapse, since there's three separate gufim mechulakim, it's three separate women, then they have to bring a chatas for each of the three. Okay? And that's basically the scope of the Masechta. Just let me just talk about the structure for just a moment, then we'll wrap it up. So, there are six prakim here. The first two mishnayos deal with the 36 krisos and then the obligation if one does it, b'meiz shogeg, etc., bring chatas. Then we go on to talk about like complexities that arise from giving birth in the first parak, and then the ashamos and mechusari kippurim, like the ashamos and those concluding korbanos in the second parak. The third parak deals with essentially when you have to bring multiple chataos at the same time, like it is discussed, the chiluk chataos. And then the fourth and fifth parak deal with situations of suffix. So that means the asham tali and the like, where you're not sure if you have to bring it or what to bring if you're not sure what you did. And then the sixth parak really is a miscellany of how Yom Kippur works with all this and how you choose the right animals for korbanos and that kind of thing. So good. With that, Bez Hashem, we're ready to start the Masechta in earnest.